Welcome, my name is Gabrielle.
And my name is Lely Tasha.
And this is the inaugural podcast of New Age Old World, a podcast about seeing any religion in a New Age light. As previously mentioned, this is our inaugural podcast. We hope to release a podcast, in a regular manner, perhaps quarterly at the absolute latest. Does that seem about good for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully more frequently than that if we can pull it off, but we're humans and we have obligations. So the idea for the podcast actually came about as something that popped into my head out of a necessity for having a podcast that sort of viewed religion in a very New Agey sort of way, despite what kind of religion you have. A lot of the podcasts I listen to or would kind of sample would be podcasts that were either your typical Christian podcast that were all about serving Jesus and serving God, but they were very your normal on the radio kind of stuff. It wasn't from a very holistic perspective. Or I'd be listening to like pagan podcasts, for example, which is all fine and dandy, but at the same time, not my personal religion. And I brought the attention of the idea to my best friend for like 10 years now. And I don't know why you agreed with my crazy plan.
It seemed interesting, and hey, it's fun to go along for the ride, and I wanted to see what was going to happen. I figured at the very least some interesting discussions would happen, and let's face it, it pleases the inner anthropologist that I have.
I was going to say, Lely Tasha is kind of the lowest to my Peter sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or would you be the Brian to my Peter? Maybe that would be more...
That would possibly be more appropriate, but... Or if you go by the Tom Stoppard, I am the Guildenstern to your Rosencrantz.
And now we're getting technical. Now we're getting fancy. Well, well, both of us came up with the idea to do a sort of introductory recording separately when we had some of the free time to do it, so that way you could get an idea of who your hosts are. As I said, they're pre-recorded, so we're going to insert them for you, and you can listen to those, and then when those are done, you'll hear our lovely live voices again. So here they are. My name is Gabrielle, and I'll be your co-host. This is a new podcast that I have created with the help of my good friend, because I sort of felt like there was a niche that I needed to be filled. And when I couldn't find it, I just decided, I guess I'll just have to make my own podcast. So here we are. The sort of basis of this podcast is to look into alternative religions, New Age religions, religions that are perhaps older religions but have a new way of looking into them, which would be sort of where my perspective is coming from. It came from my desire to really get a feel for Judaism as a pagan religion. I know it sounds really kind of weird, and what it boils down to is that I'm converting to Judaism, and I have a foundation in paganism. I actually was studying paganism and really considering following paganism, not from a dogmatic perspective, but simply from a practicing perspective. And I'll get into that a little bit later, or perhaps in the next episode, depending on how much time I have here. But I really was interested in the ideas of following paganism from its ritualistic aspect. I grew up as a Catholic, and while Catholic is very ritualistic, it tends to sort of be ritualistic in sort of a traditional manner and not in a religious spiritual manner. Too much of Christianity, from what I felt, was this idea that you feel everything within your soul. You feel with everything within your heart and within inside you. But there wasn't a whole lot of emphasis on any physical aspects. Paganism, for example, you follow all of your rituals based on things that you can feel in the physical world, based on things that are existing in the physical world. The seasons changing, the sun rising, setting, growing, the days growing longer, the days growing shorter, it's getting warmer, colder. The smells of, you know, grass and flowers growing in the spring, of trees turning into, you know, the colors and dying and falling off in the fall, the crispness of winter, the, you know, all the wonderful smells of people, you know, barbecuing or whatever in the summertime. It's all something that you can feel physically, and then it can bring your spiritualness into it. Whereas so many other religions, it was like, well, we really don't pay too much attention to the physical world because the physical world is not important. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that people were saying that the physical world wasn't important, because I know me personally, I am two things. I'm a spiritual person, I have a soul, and I'm a physical person, I have a body. And I'm not going to completely deny my body things in favor of my spiritual, my soul. People don't, you know, sacrifice their soul for their physical, for the physicalness. I don't believe that anybody does that. I believe that people, you know, may build one up over the other one, but I think that they're always interlocked. It's always, you know, your emotional and your spiritual psyche or whatever. I'm probably getting the terminology completely wrong. But it's always a mix of two. It's like I choose physical pleasure over any emotional, spiritual pleasure, because that physical pleasure actually fulfills my emotional and spiritual needs or whatever. I'm not that kind of a person. I can't speak for people like that, but that's sort of my interpretation of it. So why should I be forced to say that, well, I should give up all of my physical sensations because it's not important? I think that's silly. You know, God put us on this planet. He changes the seasons. He gives these pleasures, the pleasures of feeling the seasons changing, of experiencing each seasons, of feeling the wonderful sensations of the wind on your face and the smells and the tastes. He gives us all these gifts, and we're supposed to ignore them because what's important is our, you know, everlasting souls. It didn't make sense to me at all to feel that way, to think that way. So I was always very fascinated in paganism, because paganism was very much involved in both the physical world and the spiritual world being one and being combined. And later when I found Judaism, I found Judaism through that same mentality, because Judaism is beautiful in its aspect to connect the physical world and the spiritual world. One of my favorite examples is sitting Shiva, which is the ritual that's done when a person has died. It's a memorial ritual. It's a memorial service, essentially. And it's mainly focusing on the people who are immediately related to that person who has died. And there's things like you cover all the mirrors, because people shouldn't have to worry about what they look like when they're mourning. You should be allowed to mourn and have your hair look like a mess and have your face look all blotchy and red without people making you feel bad because I look like a mess. It doesn't matter. That's not what's important. I don't fully understand this, but I'm pretty sure it's like you don't change your clothes. You don't take baths, you don't worry about the mundane, the physical aspects, really, because what you should be focusing right on now is grieving, because that is all that you can think about. That is all that takes up your entire mind and spirit and psyche, is the fact that you are just grieving with the utmost unbearable pain. And once you get that out of your system, you can move on. That's the way that we work. That's not even a spiritual thing. That's not a soul issue. That is a mental, emotional issue. That is something that's based in your brain, which is part of your physical being, not your, you know, mind, which is part of your spiritual being. And to tell people that you have to deny that you have to deny your emotions because what's important right now is, you know, other people. It's taking care of, you know, the world, keeping your job. You have to live your life. That's not fair. And I love that Judaism accepts that physically we cannot bounce back from something that is tragic enough to mess up our mind. We can't physically bounce back from depression, because depression is physical and it takes your body down. It's not spiritual. You want to be happy. You want to sit there and say, well, they're in heaven. I should be happy. They're in the other world. They're in a better place. You're sitting there going, I'm lonely. I have lost something. I personally don't want to be happy right now because I physically cannot be happy. And Judaism recognizes that. So I felt like I really wanted to find other people who thought of Judaism as sort of the way that pagans think of paganism. I think of Judaism as being a sort of pagan religion. And if you look at the linguistics of it, you can very easily think of paganism as being, as Judaism as being a pagan religion. So that was sort of what I wanted to find, was people who sort of think of their religion the same way that people who follow alternative religions, people who follow paganism, people who follow, New Age religions, that's really kind of the best word for it. They think of their religion in that sort of New Age mentality. And the naming of the program New Age Old World is because the sort of New Age thing is getting back to what things were in the old world. The way that, you know, it didn't used to be that this was New Age. This is, you know, New Age is kind of a silly word because nothing about what we're doing is very new. It's a reclamation. It's a reclamation of the way that things were done and practiced before the modern age, before the Industrial Revolution, really, I think is what it is. I think it is just this sort of industrialized world that we live in where everything is so focused on denying yourself. I love The Wizard of Oz for describing the Tin Man. Which, for those of you who don't know, which probably is none of you, you probably all know, The Wizard of Oz was actually an allegory for basically the Industrial Revolution and bimetallism and whatnot. And the Tin Man was supposed to represent these people who were turned into machines. He, you know, describes, oh, I was chopping in the woods, and I chopped off my arm, and I chopped off my other arm, and I chopped off my leg, and I chopped off my other leg, and eventually I was made completely of metal. And it's describing how these people work and work and work and work and work until eventually they're nothing but machines themselves, and they've lost everything that was human about them. And I think that so much of our world has been doing that. You know, we've lost what's human about us. Even our religion is losing what's human about us. And so there's this new reclamation to get back to realizing that we are not machines. We are animals. We are made of the same stuff that the earth is made of, that plants are made of, that, you know, that's why we eat food. Things that live in the ground and are grown and are harvested and put in our mouths is because we are made of that stuff. We are not made of oil and gas, and that's why we don't eat oil and gas. So that was sort of the intention of this podcast, was to, you know, create a forum for people like me and to create something that I sort of felt fulfilled that need that I had to find people who felt like this. And so instead of, you know, being able to find other people ranting and raving about it, I basically just decided to, you know, rant and rave and then let people respond to me instead. However, the other side of it too is that I felt like it was kind of silly for me to just sit here and rant and rave whatever about things that I would just randomly decide. I figured the two problems that would come from that is that it would end up sounding really stupid and I would have nothing to talk about and I would not make any sense and I would basically just be, you know, talking to nothing and not even lecturing, because I think if I was lecturing, I'd probably do a better job, but I'm just kind of, you know, rambling on. And the other issue is that I probably wouldn't keep up with it very often. So I decided to invite my best friend since high school. I don't know. So I'm going to stop my ranting now, and I'm going to send this over to her. I'm going to let her give her a little introduction. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, my name is Lolly Tasha, and I'll be your faithful co-host for New Age Old World. My name, Lolly Tasha, means she who continually searches for the ecstatic flow. It was given to me by a nun of my spiritual organization when I learned a personal meditation technique. My spiritual organization is called Ananda Marga. We're a socio-spiritual organization founded in the 50s by our spiritual master, Sri Sri Anandamurti. Our philosophy is twofold. We have an emphasis on bettering society through selfless service, as well as meditation and personal spirituality. I was drawn to Ananda Marga when I first took a yoga class at my university, and the latter half was taught by a monk who is now a dear friend of mine. What he had to say about spirituality, loving oneself, and many other subjects was very inspiring to me, and I wanted to learn more of what he had to say and learn more about Anandamarga as a philosophy. Throughout this broadcast, you'll hear more and more about Anandamarga and how I try to live its philosophy as best as I can in my personal life.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our stories.
I guess now we kind of decided that we would have a bringing together discussion. I guess mostly about really what draws us to making a podcast like this. I mean, I don't know. We kind of said in the intro what brought us to the idea, where we come from. Is there anything in particular that you had in mind for a discussion? I had something, but it was a little bit off topic, so I thought maybe you might have something a little bit more.
Not really. I mean, what were you thinking of?
Well, I was kind of thinking about sort of like what I was getting out of some of the other podcasts I was hearing. Because like I said, I would listen to a lot of pagan podcasts, and what was interesting was what made those podcasts so much different than the podcasts that were Jewish podcasts or, you know, any other type of religious podcast. I mean, obviously I didn't listen to a whole lot of different religious podcasts. But particularly what I liked so much about the way that the pagan podcasts were doing it compared to the Jewish podcasts I was listening to. Mostly being that I would try to find these Jewish podcasts, and it would all be rabbis who were doing some kind of teaching. And I didn't want a teaching podcast. And I I've heard Christian radio and Christian podcasts before, and they tend to be so focused on, like, how one should serve God and serve Jesus. And that always really irked me. I didn't like the idea. It makes religion feel like an obligation. Like, you know, we have to do, I want to listen to a show where I'm getting support from other people who want to sin to keep me from sinning. It's like religion is not an AA meeting. I mean, you know, there's definitely aspects to that that are wonderful, but I didn't want to approach my general religious experience like it's something that's helping me recover from being a horrible, sinning human being. And
yeah,
on the Jewish, like, teaching podcasts and stuff, I'm not going to listen to some stranger that I have no knowledge of their background give me lessons when I can go to my, you know, my own rabbi and my friends and have them teach me about, you know, stuff out of the Torah and stuff. I wanted to hear from normal people. I wanted to hear from average, everyday religious people. And I wanted to hear about, and this is where the pagan kind of thing comes in. You know, I really don't like the word pagan because it's very inaccurate. It's sort of this, like, generic word that's really it's a derogatory term originally.
Yeah.
And pagan actually, I believe comes from the Roman word for like a villager. So it's basically referring to the rednecks, the people in the podunk area that had the non-Roman religion. So, you know, it's a heathen is similar too. Heathen comes from people who lived on the heath. Heath, heathen. So this is a word that's, you know, like I said, it's kind of a derogatory word. And then on top of that, it's got this connotation now where people automatically think pagan as something bad. And a lot of people use it as an excuse, even like, you know, like the government, for example, will use it as an excuse not to acknowledge it. Because you hear the word pagan and you're like, oh, that's something bad. And, you know, I don't like that. But on top of that, but I mean, I know the pagan community, a lot of them are like, you know, this is a fine word. We like using it. And as I'm not a member of it, you know, I don't get a vote. But it's like, I don't know. It just seems weird using one word to refer to religions that have very little to do with each other just because they were religions that were folk religions, and they all sort of died out a little bit and then came back in this, you know, big revival.
Using one word does kind of collapse the distinction between all of these, all these various belief systems that are very different from one another. And yeah, if a person is okay with a certain word, fine, it's their prerogative to use that word. But as the linguist, as the wordy person, I do find that, you know, if we're going to use one word, we are ignoring a whole realm of diversity that is out there. Not that everything can be encompassed by our language, but it is better to try and to differentiate from different groups that are distinct from one another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The word I like to use a lot more is earth-based religion. The nice thing about that, too, is that, like, I like to think of Judaism as being an earth-based religion. And I've actually heard a lot of people, like, when you kind of point it out to them, if you're saying, well, if you think about the fact that our holidays are based on the seasons, we have rituals that revolve around the moon phases, you know, and people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, that, you know, like, normal Jewish people, not, like, you know, the renewalists or the people that are very much into the Kabbalah, but just your sort of average everyday Jew will even be like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So that's kind of the nice thing about it, is that it's this nice open word that can mean a lot of different things. So I like to use the word earth-based religion, and a lot of these, you know, advertised as pagan podcasts that have these earth-based religions in them, thereby average everyday people with, you know, average levels of education. We're not talking about professors and people who've gone to extensive seminary, you know, theological classes and whatnot. It's just, you know, an average people talking about their own spirituality and talking about it as a method of action, like proactive expression, as opposed to sort of how to oppress ourselves, oppress our negative selves. It's more about, you know,
something more as an experiential thing than something that happens to you.
Right. Yeah.
More as an active participant.
Excellent. Yeah, that's exactly a great way of saying it. So that's what I really want this to be, is taking that idea but using it to refer to really any spiritual path. Because I'm sure, you know, there are Christians out there who are like, yeah, I really don't like listening to Christianity like this. You know, I've heard evangelicals. I'm not very familiar with evangelical Christianity, but I've heard that that's how they don't like to think of anything negative. Everything has to be very positive. And, you know, the idea is that they could listen to this and be like, yeah, this is really great, you know, and open their mind to, you know, a whole broad view of spirituality instead of just thinking it as religion versus religion.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what drew me to this in general, was the idea of being able to point out and remind people that there is a whole realm of diversity out there, and to approach it with an open mind, that it doesn't have to be your cup of tea for it to be valid and worth learning about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually got into a conversation with somebody this past weekend about what I was saying about the pagan being kind of this negative word. And I wish I remembered exactly what it was that got me kind of riled up about it. But something reminded me of something I had heard, a story I had heard about a woman who was on Craigslist, and she was looking for mothers groups. And I guess Craigslist can have, you can, if you look at a person's profile, you can see ads that they've replied to, or things that they've searched, or something like that. And being a mother's group, the other, you know, the head den mother wanted to know who this mother was. So she's looking at her profile and she sees all these like pagan stuff. And this was after she had already told the woman, yeah, we'd love to have you. And then while investigating the woman, she sees that she's pagan. And she said, a lot of us mothers don't feel comfortable with our children associating with pagans. And as a Jew, that was something that was extremely touchy to me. Because I know nowadays people don't tend to see, you know, in America, people don't see Judaism that way. Because, you know, it's not popular to see that way. But there were times when people would have, not too long ago, when people would have been like, well, we really don't want our children associating with Jews. Or, you know, Muslims get that today, where people will say, well, I don't know, I just don't feel comfortable. And it's offensive.
It is. There is nothing inherent about one's religion that should denigrate them as a person and make them suspect.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, with Judaism, it's kind of come to this point where nobody wants to be seen as being anti-Semitic. So people, it's not a popular position to hold. And therefore, as not being a popular position, a lot, it's not usually, you know, taught to children to be anti-Semitic and so on and so forth. So people tend to be like, oh, you know, Judaism is okay. Right now, Islam is, it's popular to be anti-Islam. But at the same time, there's a lot of Muslims in the world. There's a lot of Muslims in America, and they can voice their opinion and set, and people will listen. And so they, you know, they have a voice to come out and say, this is not okay. This is not acceptable. You can't judge me because of what a bunch of crazy radicals do. That's like trying to judge every Christian by the Christian, that Baptist, or no, not Baptist, sorry, the, what's that one group?
Westboro Baptist Church.
Okay, it is Baptist, yeah. Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah, the Westboro Baptist Church.
Exactly. It's like, you know, if everybody thought that that was the basic, you know, that was what Christians were. And it's like, that's, you know, a very small group of people. But like I said, the Muslims have a voice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of religious groups out there who don't have a who don't have a big enough voice and who don't have a loud enough voice. And that really bugs me.
Yeah. Well, I think for some people, they seem to mistake being a person for having a voice. Just because you are a person and have the capability of speech and rational thought doesn't necessarily mean that you have a voice in the wider world or that it's listened to. There are many people who undergo prejudice every day who don't have that much of a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tragedy when we look at so much of what goes on around us and we ignore the fact that there are people without a voice. Even if a group does have a voice, it is worthwhile to stand up and say along with them that certain things will not be tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of hope that this will remind people that even religions you've never heard of, spiritual paths that are small and unfamiliar, they deserve their voice as well to be heard.
It's a bit of a catch-22 with the fact that you could come out and say, oh, well, my religious belief is Astero, which is the, for lack of a better term, Norse mythology, paganistic religion, uh-huh. Earth-based religion. And that people probably, as long as you said it and didn't get into too many details, or if you were very careful about how you said it, people wouldn't automatically have an opinion about it. And they might just kind of go, oh, okay, whatever. It's just another one of those weird religions I've never heard of before. So if all the people that were members of Earth-based religions were to come out and say, well, I'm actually, you know, Hellenistic, or I can't even remember exactly what they call themselves. Wiccan tends to be something that people tend to know, but just kind of the idea of saying more specifically the actual path that you follow, they might come into less prejudice or automatic prejudice.
Yeah.
But the downside being that then their numbers Yeah, very, very small. Which is sort of like, I wonder if it would almost work better from a political point of view if it was like a union of people instead of falling under one umbrella religion. And
a cooperative of religions, you mean?
Right, right. So I don't know. But like I said, you know, I don't get a vote in that. But it was something that was kind of an interesting series of ideas. It wasn't really much of a discussion when I had it. It was more me kind of speaking to somebody and the other person going, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, okay. yeah, that was kind of just this sort of idea of minority religions and the difficulties that they can have in America amongst, you know, what's supposed to be very open-minded people that compared to other countries. So,
yeah.
So you moved out from where you had been living for 4 years to, a new college out. Should I say where you are? Or should I keep that off the record?
Philadelphia's a big city, man. just say that I moved for school in the Philadelphia area.
Okay. You recently moved to go to school in the Philadelphia area from our Illinois town and had to leave your community that you had been a part of, that had basically brought you into your spiritual path. How's it been going? How's the move been going?
I gotta say that lacking my community and basically my friends has not been the most wonderful experience of my life. To leave anyone that you are affectionate towards is never a good time.
Mm-hmm.
I am keeping in touch with them as much as I can. The modern telecommunications are wonderful. And in the way of my personal experience is that I'm spending the time being more contemplative. We do a lot of meditation in general, but I find myself just thinking about the realities, and when I'm not meditating, just thinking about philosophy in general when I'm not obsessed with whatever I've been assigned for class. So I find that in the way of being able to practice, to go out and have that community level and that interaction, I haven't been able to, but I've been picking up books of all sorts on different kinds of philosophy, and even some of my textbooks from class I've been integrating into the Anandamarga philosophy and looking at them, arguing them for or against them from the Anandamarga standpoint. The other purpose, I've also been integrating issues of the political history of India into a lot of Anandamarga philosophy and history. Everything that Gandhi was doing was pretty much a precursor to a lot of what Anandamarga was doing, in that Gandhi was obviously did a lot of his political work before 1947. Anandamarga was founded in 1955, so there's a lot of holdover in the way of 1947 was independence, and Anandamarga was founded only 8 years later. There's still a lot of issues that were still simmering on the back burner from independence and social justice and things like that, that Anandamarga actually spearheaded in some ways. So from that standpoint, I'm also being able to contextualize, because I'm taking this class, I'm able to contextualize the beginnings of Anandamarga, which is interesting. But from the experience standpoint and from the practice standpoint, I do miss my community. I'm not going to lie.
Do you find that it's easier or harder to be active in your path in your practice without the community? Because I know for me, like, in the summertime when everyone's gone from campus, I don't celebrate holidays. I mean, there's not a whole lot of Jewish holidays in the summer, but You know, I don't do, I forget to fast. I don't observe the Sabbath. I just, without that community, I kind of forget what to do. So I know that, you know, you're, a lot of your practice is involved in being secluded, but I was wondering how, you know, if that adds to, if being more secluded adds to it, or if it does sort of, if you do have to be a little bit more, personally diligent.
I do have to be more personally diligent. Going to group meditation on Sundays was something I always knew I was going to go. People would be like, where were you last Sunday if I didn't show up? It was very much a you kind of watch each other and you encourage each other to show up. And in addition, that was also a really nice recharge of my batteries, that collective energy of everyone doing one thing and focusing really does help. There is that community aspect where you are part of a group that does help for personal practice. On my own recently, I really need to get in a much more regular schedule of meditation. And it's just been hard to connect that with also to get that integrated into a very new lifestyle and a schedule that has been unprecedented in my previous academic career. So, but yeah.
I know that you've been vegetarian for so long now, that's probably not even an issue, but you were, every now and then you try to get really good about it, and then sometimes I hear that you're really not that good about it. How are you doing with eating?
I'm doing pretty well. I have relaxed on a lot of, on some rules, but particularly pertaining to garlic. I don't use onion a lot in cooking just because I'm not a big fan of onion. Mm-hmm. And then in lieu of meat, any animal-based products, any meat products. Oh, let's see.
I imagine now it would give you horrible indigestion.
Oh, yes. A large quantity would really not be the happiest thing for me physically. I did have a single mussel when I was out with my brother and his friends. They were going to a traditional Pennsylvania bar, and one of the traditions is to eat mussels with your beer. I had at the same restaurant, I managed to have the best veggie burger I've ever had in my life. Wow. Also, the biggest. But in the spirit of tradition, I had a mussel. And it wasn't a big deal for me. But yeah, in the way of actually making a meal on any meat, I would not want to subject myself to that physical pain. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I guess I would think egg and onion would really be the hardest ones, just because I found it like onion is the secret ingredient in pretty much everything. And egg is sort of a big product in everything as well.
Yeah, well, egg I find, I don't have eggs in my kitchen, I don't, you know, use or cook eggs on a regular basis and just eat them in the way of what they are in, where they are present in foods that I'm buying. I really don't bother too much with that. And I do tend to do a lot of my own cooking. I try and make large pots of things, a big pot of stew that I can eat through for 3 or 4 days, or a pan of something lasagna-ish, or a other casserole kind of thing, so that I can have control. And then also for my laziness, I will not deny that actually getting up and cooking is not my idea of a good time.
Yeah.
So.
As somebody who pretty much can't eat anything that's already been made, I know exactly what you mean. I got some gluten-free cottage cheese, or not gluten-free cottage cheese. Cottage cheese tends to be gluten-free. Gluten-free macaroni and cheese, and it's, like, already made, just stick it in the microwave, and I'm, like, savoring it. I'm like, no, I can't use it, because one day I may not have time to cook, and I may be hungry.
Yes, you have to ration yourself on the ready-made stuff.
Precisely. I did, however, get a bunch of, I was directed to
by my Rebbetzin, so for in layman's terms, the wife of the rabbi, Rebbetzin, to a website that has kosher gluten-free food. And now I had to have it shipped in, and the shipping price was about literally the same as the order price. So this is definitely a treat, and I should probably make huge orders and stock up when I do get it. But I got gluten-free pizza kosher pizza crusts, so like personal size. So all I have to do is throw some toppings on it and throw it in the oven. So I can
have a lucky wolf.
Yeah, so I can have pizza. And then I finally went out and bought Parv margarine. Because most margarine is dairy still. So I have margarine that is not dairy. And I can use it on my meat products. I'm all proud of myself now. So
yeah.
It's baby steps, baby steps.
Yeah. Well, it's baby steps and then also living in a modern world that, for me, garlic and onion are nearly impossible to avoid. In my own kitchen, obviously, I have much more control. And I, before I came out here, I went to a very specialty grocery store and bought myself a garlic substitute so that I could have it here. It was quite expensive in the way of spices, but it's great to have it. So,
what is it?
It's called Hing. H-I-N-G. It also goes by the name of asafoetida. It's, I believe, an Indian spice that is a pretty decent garlic substitute. If you plan on using it, be careful. You have to use it in minute amounts. It's very strong, very powerful. Keep it in a airtight jar, otherwise your house will stink forever. And you have to cook it a little bit before you actually use it. It's not like you can just throw it on top of a ready-made thing. You have to fry it in a little bit of oil first. Otherwise, it's wickedly bitter. So you have to kill a little bit of the flavor to get it down to the level of actually edible.
Are you allowed to have horseradish?
Yeah.
I would think horseradish would be a pretty good substitute for garlic.
Oh, yeah, well, too much horseradish, though, gives me, it's the ice cream headache of burn. It's very intense and very short. That's what, same with wasabi. It's another version of horseradish.
Oh, yeah. So. You know, one time I'm like, one of these days, just to see what happens, I want to have some ice cream and some wasabi at the same time to see what happens when you get a brain freeze and brain fry at the same time.
Oh, that can't be kosher.
Wasn't there something about self-preservation?
I don't think it's kosher for the fact of it's so masochistic.
There is a mitzvah, a restriction about doing personal harm to yourself. So yes, that could be very true. We'll see.
Though it may be that masochistic where the rabbi looks at you and just shakes.
Your penance is what you have to suffer.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know. I mean, Judaism encourages curiosity, so.
Well, you know what curiosity did to the cat, my friend?
I don't know. I have two cats, and they're doing pretty okay, so. I don't think I have good examples.
Has one of them landed in the toilet yet?
When they were kittens. They're...
At the very least, curiosity massively upsets the kitty.
That is true. That has been proven many times over. Well, I do believe that we have filled up the proper amount of time. We try to make these shows about approximately an hour long. I mean, we're not sticklers about it because that just proves for a not-so-fun show. And on top of that, it's a podcast. It's not like we have, time slots. This is Gabrielle saying Aleinu Shalom Aleichem.
And this is Lali Tesha wishing you a pleasant day, evening, or afternoon.
New Age Old World is hosted by Podbean.com. The theme music is Ala Le'ake by Daniel Bergman, provided by Megatune.com. If you'd like to comment, you can do so by going to our website, newageoldworld.podbean.com.